You are listening to Adventures Within with Jennifer Moon and Robert Watkins. Adventures Within is brought to you by Faction 2 of The Revolution in partnership with Kaechung Radio. Faction 2 of The Revolution is committed to creating alternatives to the established orders of both the bourgeois culture of the fine art world and the spectacle arena of representations that constitute popular culture, in order to stimulate a new society that is both socially aware and politically motivated. Adventures Within is fervent in its mission to heighten awareness in and of the personal and private realms in order to realize and sustain political action. The segregation of the personal and the political, the public and the private, the individual and the populace, are no longer expansive. This is Adventures Within.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Adventures Within. This is Jennifer Moon, and tonight I'm going to talk about loneliness. I'm gonna try something new, and I'm gonna play music kind of like in the background. I'm gonna play this album. It's by this young singer-songwriter. Her name is Rosie Tucker, and the album is called Lowlight. So when I was like trying to get into loneliness mode, I was listening to this album on repeat for like a whole week. So I thought, oh, well, it might be fitting to have this in the background. Maybe it could conjure up feelings of loneliness. So I'm going to play that in the background. Let me push play. Okay. So this album, well, let me just make sure it's on repeat. Yep. Okay. So I learned about this singer songwriter Rosie Tucker through a friend, M Infinity, as I call her. Anyway, Minfinity sent this album to Belle. I'm using all these pseudonyms. So Minfinity sent this album to Belle, and he listened to it at my house while he was getting ready to pick up J2 at the airport. So when I heard it, I was like, oh my god, I love this. And so then I just continued to listen to it. So the reason why I want to talk about loneliness is because about, I guess, 3 weekends ago, I had this experience where I felt really lonely, and I actually cried. If you get my mailer, it kind of describes what happened, but I will relay the story now for people who don't get the mailer. So 3 weekends ago, it was a rare weekend where I had no social events, scheduled. So it was like a weekend of, you know, doing nothing, and I was really looking forward to it. And, my closest friend who's David Bell, he was off with his lover or significant other or whatever you want to call it. On a kind of getaway weekend. And so I was like really looking forward to just like doing nothing and spending time in solitude. It sounded really appealing. And so I think Saturday night I was watching some romantic comedy. I can't remember what it was. And oftentimes when I... The times when I actually feel lonely are usually when I watch like romantic comedies, because it You know, loneliness is essentially about like wanting more intimacy. So when I watch romantic comedies, it reminds me that I want that I want to maybe have like a significant other or partner or whoever to share my life with. So I watched this movie, and then I cried during the movie, and then I went outside to smoke a cigarette, and feeling sad and all alone, and I looked up at the sky, and there was like one bright star, or maybe it was a planet. And I was sitting there, and I imagined like someone somewhere in the world also looking up at that same star, feeling just as lonely as me. And then I started crying. And as I've mentioned before, and people who know me, it's like not super easy for me to cry. So I was like kind of like trying to allow it to come, allowing the tears to come. And it felt really good. And I started thinking about loneliness. Like, why am I feeling so lonely? It's been, by the end of June, it'll be 5 years since I've not had a lover or a significant other or a partner or a life partner or whatever you want to call it. Nor have I had like really significant, like intimate physical, like affections from a person. However, like during these past 5 years, I don't necessarily think I felt lonely, but when I experienced these tears and these feelings of loneliness, I wondered if I've been lonely this whole time, and I either like was burying it or like, you know, like kind of pushing it down, or yeah, I just was not aware of it. And I think part of the loneliness that I'm feeling is because like I've, you know, as I've talked in other shows, and some of my work focuses on my pursuit of love and my pursuit of wanting, you know, my obsessions on people and stuff like that. And I, you know, I'm realizing more and more that those people that I desired or lusted after or obsessed over, I'm realizing more and more that that's not what I want. And I think part of why I mention that I think a lot of my feeling of loneliness, I think was, and why I mentioned like why David was like gone, is because like he's kind of the closest person in my life right now, like someone I connect with on a daily basis. And like he's someone, and I was just talking to him earlier before the show, like he's someone that I when something stupid or funny happens, that I would text him. And I don't think I've had someone like that in my life, or at least not for a significant, for many, many years. I guess it's my closest like intimate relationship, and I'm realizing that that's kind of what I want. Not, you know, and I think, you know, I've talked about this before, like before I thought it was David that I wanted. However, I think it's not, you know, like I know it's not, because like the one time that we kissed, it was like really weird, and I said this thing to him. I was like, we like kissed, and I was like, do you kiss everyone like that? And I didn't, and I think at the time I was focusing on like, you know, like the way he was kissing, but I don't think that's really what I meant. I think what I meant was that like, because it had been so long that I kissed someone, so I imagined like the first time I kissed someone after so many years, that it was going to be like magical. It was going to like, I'd get butterflies in my stomach, and I would feel it in my body. That didn't happen. So I think that's kind of what I meant by that remark. And then like, you know, we processed the kiss for 2 hours. So I know it's not him. However, it's like through him, I'm realizing, and through all these other people too, I'm realizing and getting closer. I'm getting a better idea of what it is that I'm looking for. And I think I am looking for someone who is kind of like a best friend. I was actually talking about this last night with Julie Moon, about like what we're wanting out of a partner. And so So in terms of loneliness, like, you know, there's like romantic loneliness, and then there's also a loneliness, like a loneliness that's more about a disconnection, a feeling of disconnection from people in general and the world. So I thought, like, you know, I'm going to kind of go through, I think mostly in terms of like general loneliness as in a disconnection from people. I also wanted to mention one other thing too, is I think that I also like romanticize loneliness. I mean, I think it has to do with a bit with that deal that I made with the cosmic entity to forfeit all romantic relations so that my, you know, my art career would flourish. So, you know, so I think that kind of set up this dynamic, well, it set up like this binary, but it also set up this kind of identity within me where I started to value loneliness in a sort of martyrish way and like romanticizing it. And so then it became part of my identity, which then makes it harder for me to kind of let go of that. So, I mean, that's like another issue, which I might talk about a little later. So in my research on loneliness, I came upon like this article by Deepak Chopra called Living Without Loneliness, and it was on the Oprah.com, I'll lower this song, it's a little loud, website. And he was, you know, he was talking about like how, you know, proximity isn't the same as bonding, you know, and then he said that there is a sliding scale for bonding from least to most intimate, which is as follows. And so he lists the sliding scale for bonding. So starting from the least to the most intimate. So the first is like, I have nice friends and I enjoy their company. Next step up, or the number two would be, I have at least one close friend in whom I can confide. This friend is like a part of me. The third is, I am bound with a loved one in a deeply personal relationship. We have our own private world together. Fourth is, I have someone in my life who inspires me. I feel bigger and better in their presence. Five is, I am on a deep spiritual path and someone as dedicated as I am walks beside me. And six, last one is, I feel blessed to be in the presence of the divine, which I feel through everyone I meet. And I think part of why I think that I didn't experience loneliness in any kind of significantly prolonged sense is, I think, because I like to think that I have a strong faith or a strong connection with, you know, with the third communal entity. So even though I'm alone, I don't necessarily often feel alone, because I feel the presence and my connection to the third communal entity, which is essentially, you know, I don't know, you can call it the universe, or it's like the totality of everything that exists. So it's interesting, because that's like the six, like that's supposed to be like the most intimate form of bonding, is when you you feel blessed with the presence of the divine, and which you feel through everyone that you meet. But I think for me, like that, like I think in some sense it's because I skipped all those other steps, you know? Like, I have nice friends, I enjoy their company. I have a close friend in whom I confide. This friend is like a part of me, yes. But I skipped all like three, four, and five, which is I am bound with a loved one in a deeply romantic relationship. You know, we have our own private world together. You know, I have someone in my life who inspires me. I feel bigger and better in their presence. And well, I mean, I guess that my friends, I would consider a lot of my friends inspire me. You know, and I'm on a deep spiritual path, and someone as dedicated as I am walks beside me. But I guess my point is saying is that I think that like there's a tendency for me to skip steps and then think that, okay, I'm fine because I have the third communal entity and I have deep faith, therefore I, you know, can never be lonely. And then when I do at moments feel lonely, then I somehow feel that I'm lacking in some kind of enlightenment or expansion. So that's, I think, like, what I'm, the experience that I had a few weekends ago kind of, like, allowed me to crack that open, because I'm learning more and more that I think I have issues with intimacy and vulnerability, even though I talk about those things a lot on this show and within my work. And as I mentioned before, like, after the Hammer show, I started thinking, getting concerned that I'm using vulnerability and intimacy as, like, a genre. And so it's becoming more clear that that maybe that is the case. So, anyway, so Deepak Chopra goes on saying, like, relationships reflect who you are on the inside, which is why the experience of bonding can go from shallow social contact to the merging of souls. I really like that. I really like the idea of merging of souls. So, ooh, it's already 6:22. Maybe I'll skip some of this stuff, but, like, you know, he says, like, relationships exist for the purpose of mutual fulfillment. If they exist for other reasons, such as status, financial security, feeling wanted, meeting the social norm, you can certainly be happy, perhaps for a long time. However, that's not the same as being true to yourself deep down and allowing intimacy to move into the region of the soul. And the thing about, like, friendships or connections based on other reasons than, like, a certain, like, mutual fulfillment, based on, like, utility, like, in terms of, like, you know, financial security status and blah, like, that's, I thought that was interesting, because I also, in my research, I read this article on loneliness by Awais Hussain in the Harvard Crimson, and, like, he was saying how, like, Harvard values, and, like, Harvard is a place of, you know, phenomenal opportunity, so, like, they all, like, the students there all implicitly understand that, you know, you look out for number one is everyone's first kind of prerogative, and that friendships are inevitably transactional, you know, and I will befriend you as so long as a certain convenience plus utility threshold is reached, you know, so, like, constantly evaluating the utility. And I thought that was interesting, because I feel like in some sense it like, you know, the Harvard experience that he's talking about, like, mimics how a lot of, like, social bonds are formed in this world, because it's about essentially utility. I mean, we're taught in primary schools, like, it's basically, schools are there to prepare us to become useful for, you know, maintaining the current system, which is capitalism. So then, like, a lot, so it seems like a lot of relationships would be based on that. And so then going back to the Deepak Chopra article, he writes, as the poet Wordsworth lamented, the world is too much with us late and soon. We run after external rewards. We feel restless and anxious if we look inward. In essence, we are desperately trying to escape ourselves. When we run out of energy, money, playmates, and toys, what happens? And what does happen is utter loneliness. So in my research, like, in terms of statistics of loneliness, I think it's about, like, maybe as high as, like, 30% of people in the United States are report to be feeling lonely, or like, claim to be lonely. So that's, like, that's a pretty significant amount of, you know, a pretty high percentage. And it's interesting because, which I'm going to talk about this specifically, I mean, largely the rest of the show is going to largely talk about this article called, it's titled The Lethality of Loneliness by Judith. I can't talk for some reason. Okay, let me just, like, calm down here. The Lethality of Loneliness by Judith Shulevitz, and it's in the New Republic. And this whole loneliness thing is going to tie back to gene expression, which is something that I like to talk about. Oh, yeah. You know what's so interesting? Okay, so after that weekend, you know, when I had that experience of, like, feeling lonely, and then I was like, you know, I'm gonna, I really want to get into loneliness, so I'm gonna listen to this album that makes me sad over and over again to kind of prolong this feeling of loneliness so that I can see what's there. So I did that for a whole week, and then by the end of the week I got sick. Like I like totally got sick, where I was like in bed sick, like the flu sick. And I haven't gotten sick like that in a while. And I realized it's because I was lonely. And the thing about loneliness is that it affects your physical body. It affects the way your genes express themselves and compromises your immune system. So then you fall prey to illnesses more easily. So loneliness is actually, and this is what this article talks about, it's like lethal. Loneliness is lethal. A lot of what I am going to say are like direct quotes from this article by Judith Shulevitz from the New Republic. So this psychologist, Frieda Fromm Reichman, okay, among analysis, Reichman, you know, she was like one of the first people to like insist that no patient was too sick to be healed through trust and intimacy. And she figured that loneliness lay at the heart of nearly all mental illness, and that the lonely person was just about the most terrifying spectacle in the world. She once chastised her fellow therapists for withdrawing from emotionally unreachable patients rather than risk being contaminated by them. The uncanny specter of loneliness touches on our own possibility of loneliness, so that we evade it and then we feel guilty. So she wrote an essay in 1959 on loneliness, and it's considered a founding document in the scientific research of loneliness. So over the past half century, academic psychologists have largely abandoned psychoanalysis and made themselves over to biologists. And this is kind of where the gene expression comes in. You know, as they delve deeper into the workings of cells and nerves, they are confirming that loneliness is as monstrous as Fromm Reichman said it was. It has now been linked with a wide array of bodily ailments as well as old mental ones. So psychobiologists can now show that loneliness sends misleading hormonal signals, rejiggers the molecules on genes that govern behavior, and wrenches a slew of other systems out of whack. They have proved that long-lasting loneliness not only makes you sick, that it can kill you. And this is also confirmed in another article that I love to reference, which is The Social Life of Genes by David Dobbs, and it's in Pacific Standard is the journal. And Steve Cole is he's referenced in the article by Judith Shulevitz as well as this one by David Dobbs, and he is quoted to say that social isolation is the best established, most robust social and psychological risk factor for disease out there. Nothing can compete. So going back just to the psychological definition of loneliness, which hasn't changed much since Fromm Reichman laid it out, real loneliness, as she called it, is not what the philosopher Soren Kierkegaard characterized as the shut-upness, like being shut up in like one's house or something, and solitariness of the civilized. Nor is real, quote-unquote, real loneliness the happy solitude of the productive artist, or the passing irritation of being cooped up with the flu while all your friends go off on some adventure, which is what I totally experienced when I was sick. Which is funny. I was like thinking like the loneliness kind of, you know, created or at least laid the foundation for me to get sick. And then I got sick, which made me even more lonely. So it's like this kind of like perpetuates itself. And like how to get out of that, you know, is can be tricky. And so I could see how like people get like sucked into that trap of loneliness, and then like it becomes like, you know, structural. So where am I at? But yeah, so nor is real loneliness being dissatisfied with your companion of the moment, your friend or lover or even spouse, unless you chronically find yourself in that situation, in which case you may in fact be a lonely person. From Reichman even distinguished real loneliness from mourning, since the well-adjusted eventually get over that, and from depression, which may be a symptom of loneliness but is rarely the cause. Loneliness, she said, and this will surprise no one, is the want of intimacy. So today's psychologists, except from Reichman's inventory of all the things that loneliness isn't, and but they add something else, which is they insist that loneliness must be seen as an interior subjective experience, not an external objective condition. So loneliness is not synonymous with, you know, being alone, you know, nor does being with others guarantee protection from feeling loneliness. Like, many people can be, you know, people who are in marriages often feel lonely. People who can feel lonely in a huge crowd of people. And then conversely, people, like I just said, like I mentioned, like me being alone, even though like I'm physically alone or not around people, I don't feel alone. So it has nothing to do with like, the outsides. It's an interior subjective experience, you know? So, and then this, the leading psychologist on the subject, which is, John, oh my God, I should have looked up how to pronounce his name. Kakiopo. I'm probably totally mispronouncing that. So he was saying that, you know, that it's the emotions that wreaks havoc. It's the feeling that wreak havoc on the body and brain. And so loneliness is essentially like a public health crisis, you know. And then this W.H. Auden put it, is he states it this way, like, we must love one another or die. And so... so who are generally the lonely? And generally, the lonely are the outsiders. And they, in this article, they talk about the elderly a lot, too. But it's not just the elderly, but also, and this is a quote from the article, but also the poor, the bullied, the different. Surveys confirm that people who feel discriminated against are more likely to feel lonely than those who don't, even when they don't fall into the categories that I just listed. A key part of feeling lonely is feeling rejected, and that feeling of rejection is the most damaging part. So, and I've mentioned this when I did a show about gene expression, and it talked about this study, which is a study of gay men who have been infected with HIV, and so in the study. You know, they're trying to figure out, like Steve Cole says, how the physical world of our bodies gets remodeled by our psychic and conceptual worlds. Okay, so he's trying to figure out how the physical world of our bodies, how basically our psychic and conceptual notions of the world affects the physical world. So he's trying to figure out which social factors sped up the progression of the disease. So, you know, when they first tried to isolate it, they did like the kind of like standard distinctions between social economic factors as well as like social support, but they found that those didn't necessarily have a huge effect in terms of what sped up the progression of the disease. So then Steve Cole read this book by Irving Goffman called The Stigma, Notes on the Management of a Spoiled Identity, that tallies in detail the difficulties of quote-unquote passing as someone else. So Steve Cole learned that the closeted men must police every piece of information known about him. And this isn't, and I think this also translates not necessarily to people who are closeted gay men, but also anyone who is trying to pass off as someone else, you know, which I feel like that happens a lot. You know, I've definitely tried to pass off as someone else in different situations. And so what Cole learned is that, like, specifically in this study, is that the closeted men must police every piece of information known about him, live in constant terror of exposure or blackmail, and impose sharp limits on intimacy or at least friendship. So yeah, so that's like the huge thing is, like, because you're trying to pass off as someone else, that will lead to imposing sharp limits on intimacy. Like, you cannot get too intimate with people in fear of exposing your, you know, the thing that you're trying to hide. So Cole figured that a man who'd hide behind a false identity was probably more sensitive than others to the pain of rejection. His temperament would be more tightly wound, and his stress response system would be the kind that fires responses and fires him harder. His heart would beat faster, stress hormones would flood his body, his tissues would swell up, and white blood cells would swarm out to protect him against assault. If this state of inflamed arousal subsided quickly, it would be harmless. But if the man, if a person, specifically this is the study, so if the man stayed on high alert for years at a time, then his blood pressure would rise, and the part of his immune system that fended off smaller, subtler threats, like viruses, would not do its job. So in the test, in this study, they found that closeted men infected with HIV died an average of 2 to 3 years earlier than people who were out. And when Cole dosed AIDS-infected white blood cells with norepinephrine. Norepinephrine. Okay, I can't. I'm really sorry that I'm being like really frantic right now, but why can't I pronounce it? Norepinephrine, which is a stress hormone. The virus replicated itself 3 to 10 times faster than it did in non-dose cells. So, you know, after the results of these tests, like, Cole kind of mulled over these results for a long time, and he couldn't understand, like, why would we have been built in such a way that loneliness would interfere with our ability to fend off disease? And so he asked, like, this is quote, like, did God want us to die when we got stressed? So why would we have this built-in system that when we get lonely, it would interfere with our ability to fend off disease? There must be like a reason. So he was like wondering, like, why, you know, like, was it in the plan of the universe or God or whatever that like it's built into us that when we get lonely and stressed that we should die? But it's actually the opposite. Like, what God or the universe or whoever you want to call it wanted is not to be alone. You know, and there's like existentialists. Some existentialists believe that, you know, each human being comes into the world alone, travels through life as a separate person, and ultimately dies alone. And I know many people who believe this, which would mean that loneliness is an inherent human condition. But through all these studies and tests and what they're learning about gene expression is that we're not supposed to be alone. And this is a quote from another researcher, Suomi. The very fact that something outside the organism can affect the genes like that, it's like a huge thing. You know, it changes the way one thinks about development. So, and this is a quote from Steve Cole. This is what a cell is about. A cell, he said, is a machine for turning experience into biology. So, I think, you know, the thing, and then Cole goes on to say that, like, you know, we're made up of cells, right? We are but cells, this is what he says. At each cell center, a tight tangle of DNA writes and hands off the cell's marching orders. Between that center and the world stands only a series of membranes. And these membranes are porous. They're porous membranes. So we think of our bodies as stable biological structures that live in the world but are fundamentally separate from it. That we are unitary organisms in the world passing through it. And that's kind of like this existentialist idea that we come into the world alone. We travel through life as a separate human being. And this is like, and then we die alone. And so generally we think of ourselves as these kind of independent, stable biological structures that are separate, fundamentally separate from the world, that we're unitary organisms in the world passing through it. But what Cole is learning and what these researchers and psychobiologists are learning is that through the molecular process, they're learning that we're actually more fluid than we realize. And this is what he said. But what we're learning from the molecular processes that actually keep our bodies running is that we're more we're far more fluid than we realize, and the world passes through us. So it's I think, you know, like, so if the world is, if we're porous membranes and the world passes through us, and cells are essentially machines for turning experience into biology, and the things that are our external worlds shape our internal worlds, then it seems to me logical that we aren't alone. That we're all, we come into the world as a component to it. Like, we come into the world and then we're added into this giant super whatever organism made up of all of us and everything else in the world, and so we're part of it. And so I'm like wondering where this idea of like aloneness comes from. I mean, I guess it's probably because it fits the system that we're in, because it's this which is, you know, it's capitalism. So in order for capitalism to survive, it's better off if each of us think that we're independent individual humans, that we like fight for, you know, making it on the top, and it's for the survival of the system. So anyways, another thing about loneliness is that it's part of loneliness is like heritable, like it's inherited. Yeah, wait, before I go into that, I want to talk about one really quickly if I have time. Yeah. There's also this other experiment. It's a famous experiment which helps explain why rejection makes us flinch. So, and it was conducted like over a decade ago by Naomi Eisenberger, who is a social psychologist at UCLA. So Naomi, along with her colleagues, conducted this experiment where they where people were brought one by one into the lab to play a multiplayer online game called Cyberball. So Cyberball involved tossing a ball back and forth with two other people who weren't actually people at all, but a computer program. So these two people who are actually a computer program, in the beginning of the game, they play nicely with the real person for a while. So they throw the ball to the real person, then proceeded to ignore the person and only throwing the ball to each other. So through magnetic resonance imaging scans, it showed that the experience of being snubbed lit up a part of the subject's brain, the dorsal anterior cingulate cortex, and it's the same, it also lights up when a body feels physical pain. So rejection actually is very similar to physical pain, which I think is interesting. And there is. I mean, I've certainly felt. Oh yeah, like recently, someone unsubscribed from my mailing list, and I totally felt a little bit of a pain. So it's like that pain of rejection is the same as, it's like your body kind of registers it as the same as physical pain. So loneliness is about rejection, and then loneliness is also going back to the inherited part. So loneliness is about half heritable. So 48%, it's 48% heritability. But although genes may predispose children towards loneliness, they do not account for everything that makes them grow up lonely. So 52% of that comes from the world. So 48% heritability, 52% from the world. So let me just hold on a second. Loneliness is made us really okay. So because loneliness is, you know, is 48% heritability and 52% like from the world, it means that like we can change that. So at the end of this article, she writes, Judith writes that loneliness research forces us to acknowledge our own extraordinary malleability in the face of social forces. This susceptibility is both terrifying and exhilarating. On the terrifying side is the unhappy fact that isolation, especially when it stems from the disenfranchisement of the underprivileged, creates a bodily limitation all too easily reproduced in each successive generation. So basically, like, you know, if one is lonely, it changes. I mean, this is how I'm imagining it. Maybe it's not like this, but if one goes through life experiencing significant and prolonged loneliness, it changes one's gene expression. That gene expression is then passed down to its future generations, therefore making it like heritable. Going back to the quote, given that we have been scaling back the kinds of programs that could help people overcome such disadvantages, and that many in Congress, mostly Republicans, have been trying to defund exactly the kind of behavioral science research that could yield even better programs, we have reason to be afraid. This is what she writes. But there's something awe-inspiring about our resilience, too. Put an orphan in foster care, and his brain will repair its missing connections. Teach a lonely person to respond to others without fear and paranoia, and over time, her body will make fewer stress hormones and get less sick from them. Care for a pet or start believing in a supernatural being, and your score on the UCLA loneliness scale will go down. Even an act of simple as joining an athletic team or a church can lead to what Call calls molecular remodeling. So one message, she writes, to take away from this is, hey, it's not just early life that counts. We have to choose our life as well. So even though we may have grown up, and this article also talks a lot about, like, in terms of, like, studies with that they do with monkeys, in terms of, like, they put them into three groups. One where they're, like, cared by, the baby monkeys are cared for by the mother. One where they grow up in a kind of a peer community, kind of like Lord of the Flies, and then the third group, which is really sad, but they put like a wire framed fake mother monkey in the cage with the monkey, and maybe sometimes put cloth over it, and they see what transpires, and you know, the monkeys that don't have, who have like the wireframed fake mother monkey, they tend to not develop certain immunities to diseases. The ones who grow up in a peer community, the Lord of the Flies type of environment, they are like they have, you know, their behavior is, you know, like they huddle together, they're often like scared, they have outbursts, so it's interesting. So they're basically saying, like, the study talks about like how it's important how we're raised in order to kind of in terms of loneliness and social connection and isolation and stuff like that. However, our bodies and brains are really incredible. So if you take someone who hasn't had love, essentially, and then you start giving them love, that they can very quickly change that. So that's, you know, that's the very exciting thing about being human, I suppose. So yeah, I guess that's basically, I am so sorry. Like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I think maybe it's like the heat or something, but sorry if I was like super frantic on the show, which I feel like I am a lot, but oh well. So I'm going to sing the song we sing together very soon. Let me see. I'm just going to sing the song because obviously I have nothing really more to say. Okay, so the song that we sing together is called Fight Song by Rachel Platten. And if you want to sing along, the songs are posted on the Adventures Within K-Chung Tumblr, which is... the address is adventureswithin.kchungradio.org, and you can sing along with me. And let's see. Let me put that on. Turn this off. Turn Rosie Tucker off. And I'm going to play the song. Okay, hold on. It's going to come very soon. I'm just going to do some stuff. Okay.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves in the motion. Like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. And all those things I didn't say, wrecking balls inside my brain, I will scream them loud tonight. Can you hear my voice this time? This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm alright song. My powers turn on. I'll be strong. I'll play my fight song. And I don't really care if nobody else believes, 'cause I still got a lot of fight left in me. Losing friends and I'm chasing sleep. Everybody's worried about me. In too deep. Say I'm in too deep. It's been 2 years, I miss my home. There's a fire burning in my bones. And I still believe. Yeah, I still believe. And all those things I didn't say were wrecking balls inside my brain. I will scream them loud tonight. Can you hear my voice this time? This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm alright song. My powers turn on. I'll be strong. I'll play my fight song. And I don't really care if nobody else believes, 'cause I still got a lot of fight left in me. A lot of fight left in me. Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion. Like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm alright song. My power's turned on. I've still got a lot of fight left in me.
So there's that. Oh, I kind of feel like that line about like, and I don't really care if nobody else believes, because I still got a lot of fight left in me. Anyways, it's interesting. I do have a little bit more time, but before I play Robert's playlist, but maybe one of the reasons why I'm also feeling like a little disconnected is I feel like a little bit like I'm getting away from like I just essentially sat here and read like this article basically word from word, and it felt very detached from actually the topic of loneliness, which I think loneliness is really. There's something that happens when there's like a blockage, at least for me, of like not wanting to talk about certain things because maybe it's inappropriate or like how much do I want to expose my, which usually in the past I had no problems exposing kind of myself. But it's this the phenomenon that happens of like somehow getting it, like starting like once I start talking away from myself, like talking about loneliness, I'm no longer in loneliness, right? So maybe my kind of hesitation and stuff like that is like I'm dealing with stuff like family stuff with my brother. I just yesterday me and my parents went over to his place kind of to do like a sort of intervention. And you know, part of my maybe hesitation talking about this is because it's like it's not, you know, maybe I shouldn't talk about stuff so personal, but then it's like, why not? Why can't I? I mean, I guess it's in terms of like protecting or having respect for the person who I'm talking about, which is my brother. But, you know, like, what else are we going to talk about then? It's like, I just talk about all this other shit, but then if I don't put into practice, like, what the fuck, you know? Didn't do anything. Anyway, so, like, you know, he essentially has been alone for a large portion of his life, and especially now. And when I say intervention, I mean, because I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but I do know that, like, he is completely isolated from the world, you know, not having friends and not believing that he can have friends, not even being able to leave the house, you know, kind of experiencing social anxiety. It's interesting when I was talking to him, just like, the resistance to that, because it is scary. It's scary to go out and show oneself, especially if the thing that one is showing is full of shame and secrecy and stuff like that, or things, you know, essentially shame, you know. So it's like easy for me to, like, you know, talk about this stuff and be like, oh yeah, well, you know, 48% is heritability and 52% is, you know, from the world, so you just got to go out and, like, you know, change your gene expression and stuff like that. And then I sing the song, you know, fight song, and it's like, you know, I still got some fight in me, and, you know, I don't care if no one else believes, because I believe, you know. It's I get off on that shit, like, because I believe, I'm like, yeah, I believe, it's okay, you know. And going back to, like, the whole romanticizing of loneliness and stuff, it's like, I don't care if it's like, me alone, I still believe, just me believe, and it's, like, this kind of, like, this martyrish kind of stance. But then someone who's, like, my brother, who does not have any of this yet, or, you know, some people believe that, like, we all have this within us, it's just that we're blocked off from our connection from it, right? So, like, potentially my brother does have this fight in him, however he's currently blocked off from that. So, like, how do you get someone to connect with that again? And, like, the defense mechanisms that are up to prevent that type of, you know, to get more intimate with someone is really, it's very complex and tricky, you know. It's and, like, I found myself, like, you know, basically arguing with him of all, you know, all the reasons why, like, he shouldn't essentially do things that could potentially help. I mean, which also gets into a tricky thing is, too, is, like, help, you know, like, I found myself talking to him being, like, using these words, like, you know, help yourself and, like, learn to pay your bills. And it's, like, what the, you know, like, that's also, like, when I was saying those things, I'm, like, do I even really believe that? But then it's, like, how does one, I mean, currently that's how we had to function in order to, like, unfortunately, that's how we had to function. I don't know, but going back on the loneliness thing, it's like, it's, You know, so when I say something like, when I say things like, I experienced loneliness 3 weekends ago, it's nothing in comparison probably to what my brother feels. But however, I didn't even know if he would even say that he's lonely. I don't know. There's so many, it's so complex because, you know, pride comes in, like the ego comes in, and all these like walls and defenses and stuff like that. So yeah, that's been what's on my mind. So maybe, that's why it is difficult for me to talk about it or something, or I felt very detached from it. But yeah, anyways, loneliness. So I'm going to play Robert's playlist, and he compiled a playlist on loneliness. And let me see if I can bring up some of the songs, or, you know, I keep forgetting to mention this. Like, if it, like, raw, you can look at, like, the playlist is listed, it is listed on the Adventures Within K-Chung Tumblr, but it's also on his website, which is Robert D. Watkins. And if you go to links and then you go to Adventures Within, and all the playlists that he's compiled for the show is listed there, and you can see all the songs that he chose and stuff. So this is the loneliness playlist, and I'm just gonna play it right now. And, you know, God, thanks if for anyone who is listening or will listen to this in the future, thank you for listening, because I know it's probably not easy to listen to, and I certainly appreciate the support. So here goes the playlist.
Yeah. not lonely anymore. Now that I've realized I've got two hands, not four. So I'm not lonely anymore. Damn thing, you're going down. don't know who you are. You get your life from the star. But I can see in the dark.
In the mist. tears behind on Africa away. But Benfica still went through, and we still spent an afternoon at the Gulbenkian Museum sharing stories of a shared holiday. This statement might sound funny, but I miss you, and I'm only,
what should I say? Times I've waited. patiently for you, and you'll do just what you choose to do, and I will be alone again tonight, my dear. Somebody said to me, you know that I could be in love with almost everyone. I think that people are the greatest fun. And I will be alone again tonight, my dear.
At the posters on the wall, Tina sits and waits for a telephone call. Maxine mixes alcohol with polythene and paint. Sylvia stays in bed on her own. She can hear the cars outside and wonders where they go. And if you call her answer phone, she'll get back to you one day. And lonely girls, lonely girls, fill the world. Oh, Julie dreams while she's typing away. Jackie kills time while the company pays. Tracy still is 808s ringing in her brain. Jane slaps panes on the walls of the home. Lydia sings when she thinks she's alone. Jean gets drunk and wanders home through the car box that needs a change. Yeah, lonely girls, lonely girls, fill the wilds. And they smile through the summer and laugh in the rain. Sing through the winter, but never our lives are not what they seem. Sometimes things aren't like they are in lifestyle magazines. We see what we want to see in this miracle of clay. Well, lonely girls, lonely girls, stay home a while.
Cigarette.
been listening to Adventures Within with Jennifer Moon and Robert Watkins. This has been a production of Faction 2 of The Revolution. For more information on The Revolution, visit jmoon.net. You can also follow Adventures Within on the Cape Chung Tumblr at adventureswithin.capechungradio.org. Join us every third Sunday of the month from 6 to 8 p.m. for another episode of Adventures Within on Cape Chung Radio.